There were buildings painted on the back of other buildings. There were trees that were trees at the front, and just a mass of struts at the back. There was a flurry of activity, although as far as Victor could see, no one was actually producing anything. He watched a man in a long black cloak, a black hat, and a moustache like a yard brush, tie a girl to one of the trees. No one seemed interested in stopping him, even though she was struggling. A couple of people were in fact watching disinterestedly, and there was a man standing behind a large box on a tripod, turning a handle. She flung out an imploring arm and opened and shut her mouth soundlessly. One of the watchers stood up, sorted through a stack of boards beside him, and held one up in front of the box. It was black. On it, in white, were the words, "No, no." He walked away. The villain twirled his moustache. The man walked back with a board. This time it said, "Aha, my proud beauty." Another of the seated watchers picked up a megaphone. "Fine, fine," he said. "Okay, take 5 minutes break and then everyone back here for the big fight scene." The villain untied the girl. They wandered off. The man stopped turning the handle, lit a cigarette, and then opened the top of the box. "Everyone get that?" he said. There was a chorus of squeaks. Victor walked over and tapped the megaphone man on his shoulder. "Urgent message for Mr. Silverfish," he said. "He's in the offices over there," said the man, jerking his thumb over his shoulder without looking round. "Thank you." The first shed he poked his head into contained nothing but rows of small cages stretching away into the gloom. Indistinct things hurled themselves against the bars and chittered at him. He slammed the door hurriedly. The next door revealed Silverfish, standing in front of a desk covered with bits of glassware and drifts of paper. He didn't turn round.
"Just put it over there," he said absently.
"It's me, Mr. Silverfish," said Victor.
Silverfish turned around and peered vaguely at him as if it was Victor's fault that his name meant nothing.
"Yes? I've come because of that job," said Victor. "You know?"
"What job? What should I know?" said Silverfish. "How the hell did you get in here?"
"I broke into moving pictures," said Victor, "but it's nothing that a hammer and a few nails won't put right."
Panic bloomed on Silverfish's face. Victor pulled out the card and waved it in what he hoped was a reassuring way.
"In Ankh-Morpork," he said, "a couple of nights ago, you were being menaced."
Realization dawned.
"Oh, yes," said Silverfish faintly, "and you were the lad who was of some help. And you said to come and see you if I wanted to move pictures," said Victor. "I didn't then, but I do now."
He gave Silverfish a bright smile.
But he thought, he's going to try and wriggle out of it. He's regretting the offer. He's going to send me back to the queue.
"Well, of course," said Silverfish. "A lot of very talented people want to be in moving pictures. We're going to have sound any day now. I mean, are you a carpenter? Any alchemical experience? Have you ever trained imps? Any good with your hands at all?"
"No," Victor admitted.
"Can you sing?"
"A bit, in the bath, but not very well," Victor conceded.
"Can you dance?"
"No."
"Swords? Do you know how to handle a sword?"
"A little," said Victor.
He'd used one sometimes in the gym. He'd never in fact fought an opponent, since wizards generally abhor exercise, and the only other university resident who ever entered the place was the librarian, and then only to use the ropes and rings. But Victor had practiced an energetic and idiosyncratic technique in front of the mirror, and the mirror had never beaten him yet.
"I see," said Silverfish gloomily. "Can't sing, can't dance, can handle a sword a little."
"But I have saved your life twice," said Victor.
"Twice?" snapped Silverfish.
"Yes," said Victor. He took a deep breath. This was going to be risky.
"Then," he said, "and now."
There was a long pause. Then Silverfish said,
"I really don't think there's any call for that."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Silverfish," Victor pleaded. "I'm really not that kind of person, but you did say, and I've walked all this way, and I haven't got any money, and I'm hungry, and I'll do anything you've got. Anything at all. Please?"
Silverfish looked at him doubtfully.
"Even acting," he said.
"Pardon?"
"Moving about and pretending to do things," said Silverfish helpfully.
"Yes."
"Seems a shame, a bright, well-educated lad like you," said Silverfish. "What do you do?"
I'm studying to be a w-" Victor began. He remembered Silverfish's antipathy towards wizardry and corrected himself. A clerk.
A clerk? Said Silverfish.
I don't know if I'd be any good at acting, though, Victor confessed. Silverfish looked surprised.
Oh, you'll be okay, he said. It's very hard to be bad at acting in moving pictures.
He fumbled in his pocket and pulled out a dollar coin.
Here, he said. Go and get something to eat.
He looked Victor up and down.
Are you waiting for something? He said.
Well, said Victor, I was hoping you could tell me what's going on.
How do you mean?
A couple of nights ago I watched your click. He felt silently proud of remembering the term. Back in the city, and suddenly I wanted to be here more than anything else. I've never really wanted anything in my life before.
Silverfish's face broke into a relieved grin.
Oh, that, he said. That's just the magic of Holywood. Not wizard's magic, he added hastily, which is all superstition and mumbo-jumbo. No, this is magic for ordinary people. Your mind is fizzing with all the possibilities.
I know mine was, he added.
Yes, said Victor uncertainly, but how does it work?
Silverfish's face lit up.
You want to know, he said. You want to know how things work?
Yes, I...
You see, most people are so disappointing, Silverfish said. You show them something really wonderful, like the picture box, and they just go, oh, and they never ask how it works. Mr. Bird!
The last word was a shout. After a while, a door opened on the far side of the shack, and a man appeared. He had a picture box on a strap around his neck. Assorted tools hung from his belt. His hands were stained with chemicals, and he had no eyebrows, which Victor later was to learn was a sure sign of someone who had been around octocellulose for any length of time. He also had his cap on back to front.
"This is Gaffer Bird," beamed Silverfish. "Our head handle man. Gaffer, this is Victor. He's going to act for us."
"Oh," said Gaffer, looking at Victor in the same way that a butcher might look at a carcass. "Is he?"
"And he wants to know how things work," said Silverfish.
Gaffer gave Victor another jaundiced look.
"String," he said gloomily. "It all works by string. You'd be amazed how things fall to bits round here," he said, "if it weren't for me and my ball of string."
There was a sudden commotion from the box around his neck. He thumped it with the flat of his hand.
"You lot can cut that out," he said. He nodded at Victor. "They gets fractious if their routine is upset," he said.
"What's in the box?" said Victor.
Gaffer winked at Silverfish.
"I bet you'd like to know," he said.
Victor remembered the caged things he'd seen in the shed.
"They sound like common demons," he said cautiously.
Gaffer gave him an approving look, such as might be given to a stupid dog who had just done a rather clever trick.
"Yeah, that's right," he conceded.
"But how do you stop them escaping?" said Victor.
Gaffer leered.
"Amazing stuff, string," he said.
Cut Me Own Throat Dibbler was one of those rare people with the ability to think in straight lines. Most people think in curves and zigzags. For example, they start from a thought like, "I wonder how I can become very rich," and then proceed along an uncertain course which includes thoughts like, "I wonder what's for supper," and "I wonder who I know who can lend me $5. Whereas Throat was one of those people who could identify the thought at the other end of the process, in this case, "I am now very rich," draw a line between the two, and then think his way along it, slowly and patiently, until he got to the other end. Not that it worked. There was always, he found, some small but vital flaw in the process. It generally involved a strange reluctance on the part of people to buy what he had to sell. But his life savings were now resting in a leather bag inside his jerkin. He'd been in Holywood for a day. He'd looked at its ramshackle organization, such as it was, with the eye of a lifelong salesman. There seemed nowhere in it for him, but this wasn't a problem. There was always room at the top. A day's inquiries and careful observation had led him to interesting and instructive kinematography. Now he stood on the far side of the street, watching carefully. He watched the queue. He watched the man on the gate. He reached a decision. He strolled along the queue. He had brains. He knew he had brains. What he needed now was muscle.
Somewhere here there was bound to be...
Afternoon, Mr. Dibbler.
That flat head, those rangy arms, that curling lower lip, that croaking voice that bespoke an IQ the size of a walnut. It added up to...
It's me, Detritus, said Detritus. Fancy seeing you here, eh?
He gave Dibbler a grin like a crack appearing in a vital bridge support.
Hello, Detritus. You working in films? Said Dibbler.
Not exactly working, said Detritus bashfully.
Dibbler looked quietly at the troll, whose chipped fists were generally the final word in any street fight.
I call that disgusting, he said.
He pulled out his money bag and counted out $5.
How would you like to work for me, Detritus?
Detritus touched his jutting brow respectfully.
Right you are, Mr. Dibbler, he said.
Just step this way.
Dibbler strolled back up to the head of the queue. The man at the door thrust out an arm to bar his way.
Where do you think you're going, pal?
He said.
I have an appointment with Mr. Silverfish, said Dibbler. And he knows about this, does he?
Said the guard in tones that suggested that he personally would not believe it even if he saw it written on the sky.
Not yet, said Dibbler.
Well, my friend, in that case you can just get yourself the Detritus.
Yes, Mr. Dibbler.
Hit this man.
Right you are, Mr. Dibbler.
Detritus's arm whirled around in a 180-degree arc with oblivion on the end of it. The guard was lifted off his feet and smashed through the door, coming to a stop in its wreckage 20 feet away. There was a cheer from the queue. Dibbler looked approvingly at the troll. Detritus was wearing nothing except a ragged loincloth which covered whatever it was that trolls felt it necessary to conceal.
Very good, Detritus.
Right you are, Mr. Dibbler.
But we shall have to see about getting you a suit, said Dibbler. Now, please guard the gate. Don't let anyone in.
Right you are, Mr. Dibbler.
2 minutes later, a small grey dog trotted through the troll's short and bandy legs and hopped over the remains of the gate. But Detritus didn't do anything about this because everyone knew dogs weren't anyone.
Mr. Silverfish, said Dibbler.
Silverfish, who had been cautiously crossing the studio with a box of fresh film stock, hesitated at the sight of a skinny figure bearing down on him like a long-lost weasel. Dibbler's expression was the expression worn by something long and sleek and white as it swims over the reef and into the warm, shallow waters of the kiddies' paddling area.
Yes, said Silverfish. Who are you? How did you get...
Dibbler's the name, said Dibbler, but I'd like you to call me Throat.
He clasped Silverfish's unresisting hand and then placed his other hand on the man's shoulder and stepped forward, pumping the first hand vigorously. The effect was of acute affability, and it meant that if Silverfish backed away, he would dislocate his own elbow.
And I'd just like you to know, Dibbler went on, that we're all incredibly impressed at what you boys are doing here.
Silverfish watched his own hand being strenuously made friends with, and grinned uncertainly.
You are,
he ventured.
All this,
Dibbler released Silverfish's shoulder just long enough to expansively indicate the energetic chaos around them.
Fantastic, he said. Marvellous. And that last thing of yours, what was it called now?
High Jinks at the Store, said Silverfish. That's the one where the thief steals the sausages and the shopkeeper chases him.
Yeah, said Dibbler,
his fixed smile glazing for only a second or two before becoming truly sincere again.
Yeah, that was it. Amazing. True genius. A beautifully sustained metaphor.
That cost us nearly $20, you know, said Silverfish with shy pride. And another 40 pence for the sausages, of course.
Amazing, said Dibbler. And it must have been seen by hundreds of people, hm?
Thousands, said Silverfish.
There was no analogy for Dibbler's grin now. If it had managed to be any wider, the top of his head would have fallen off.
Thousands, he said. Really? That many? And, of course, they all pay you... Oh, how much?
Oh, we just take up a collection at the moment, said Silverfish, just to cover costs while we're still in the experimental stage, you understand. He looked down. I wonder, he added, could you stop shaking my hand now?
Dibbler followed his gaze.
Of course, he said, and let go.
Silverfish's hand carried on going up and down for a while of its own accord, out of sheer muscular spasm. Dibbler was silent for a moment, his expression that of a man in deep communion with some inner god. Then he said,
You know, Thomas, may I call you Thomas? When I saw that masterpiece, I thought, Dibbler, behind all this is a creative artist.
How did you know my name was...
A creative artist, I thought, who should be free to pursue his muse, instead of being burdened with all the fussy details of management. Am I right?
Well, it's true, all this paperwork is a bit...
My thoughts exactly, said Dibbler. And I said, Dibbler, you should go there right now and offer him your services, you know. Administrate. Take the load off his shoulders. Let him get on with what he does best. Am I right, Tom?
It's true that my forte is really more in the...
Right, said Dibbler. Tom, I accept.
Silverfish's eyes were glassy. He said... Dibbler punched him playfully on the shoulder.
Just you show me the paperwork, he said, and then you can get right out there and do whatever it is you do so well.
Yes, said Silverfish.
Dibbler grasped him by both arms and gave him 1,000 watts of integrity.
This is a proud moment for me, he said hoarsely. I can't tell you how much this means to me. I can honestly say this is the happiest day of my life. I want you to know that, Tommy. Sincerely.
The reverential silence was broken by a faint sniggering. Dibbler looked around slowly. There was no one behind them apart from a small grey mongrel dog sitting in the shade of a heap of lumber. It noticed his expression and put its head on one side.
Woof, it said.
Cut me own throat, Dibbler looked around momentarily for something to throw, realized that this would be out of character, and turned back to the imprisoned silverfish.
You know, he said sincerely, it's really lucky for me that I met you.
Lunch in a tavern had cost Victor the dollar plus a couple of pence. It was a bowl of soup. Everything cost a lot, said the soup seller, because it all had to be brought a long way. There weren't any farms around Holywood. Anyway, who'd grow things when they could be making movies? Then he reported to Gaffer for his screen test. This consisted of standing still for a minute while the handleman watched him owlishly over the top of a picture box. After the minute had passed, Gaffer said,
Right, you're a natural kid.
But I didn't do anything, said Victor. You just told me not to move.
Yeah, quite right. That's what we need, people who know how to stand still, said Gaffer. None of this fancy acting like in the theatre.
But you haven't told me what the demons do in the box, said Victor.
They do this, said Gaffer, unclicking a couple of latches.
A row of tiny, malevolent eyes glared out at Victor.
These 6 demons here, he said, pointing cautiously to avoid the claws, look out through the little hole in the front of the box and paint pictures of what they see. There has to be 6 of them, okay? 2 to paint and 4 to blow on it to get dry. On account of the next picture coming down, see? That's because every time this handle here is turned, the strip of transparent membrane is wound down 1 notch for the next picture.
He turned the handle. It went click, 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 and the imps gibbered.
What did they do that for? Said Victor.
Ah, said Gaffer, that's because the handle also drives this little wheel with whips on. The only way to get them to work fast enough. He's a lazy little devil, your average imp. It's all feedback anyway. The faster you turn the handle, the faster the film goes by. The faster they have to paint. You've got to get the speed just right. Very important job, handle manning.
But isn't it all rather, well, cruel?
Gaffer looked surprised.
Oh, no, not really. I gets a rest every 1/2 hour. Guild of Handlemen regulations.
He walked further along the bench, where another box stood with its back panel open. This time a cage full of sluggish-looking lizards blinked mournfully at Victor.
"We ain't very happy with this," said Gaffer, "but it's the best we can do. Your basic salamander, see, will lie in the desert all day absorbing light, and when it's frightened, it excretes the light again. Self-defense mechanism, it's called. So as the film goes past and the shutter ear clicks backwards and forwards, their light goes out through the film and these lenses here and onto the screen. Basically very simple."
"How do you make them frightened?" said Victor.
"You see this handle?"
"Oh." Victor prodded the picture box thoughtfully. "Well, all right," he said. "So you get lots of little pictures and you wind them fast. So we ought to see a blur, but we don't."
"Ah," said Gaffer, tapping the side of his nose. "Handleman's Guild secret, that is. Handed down from initiate to initiate," he added importantly.
Victor gave him a sharp look. "I thought people had only been making movies for a few months," he said.
Gaffer had the decency to look shifty. "Well, okay. At the moment, we're more sort of handing it round," he admitted. "They give us a few years and we'll soon be handing it down. Don't touch that!"
Victor jerked his hand back guiltily from the pile of cans on the bench.
"That's actual film in there," said Gaffer, pushing them gently to one side. "You've got to be very careful with it. You mustn't get it too hot, because it's made of octocellulose, and it don't like sharp knocks either."
"What happens to it then?" said Victor, staring at the cans.
"Who knows? No one's ever lived long enough to tell us."
Gaffer looked at Victor's expression and grinned.
"Don't worry about that," he said. "You'll be in front of the moving picture box."
"Except that I don't know how to act," said Victor.
"Do you know how to do what you're told?" said Gaffer.
"What? Well, yes, I suppose so."
"That's all you need, lad, that's all you need. That and big muscles."
They stepped out into the searing sunlight and headed for Silverfish's shed, which was occupied. Cut-me-own-throat Dibbler was meeting the movies.
"What I thought," said Dibbler, "is that, well, look, something like this."
He held up a card. On it was written, in shaky handwriting,
"After these perfromans, why not he visit Hager's House of Ribs for the best in e hort cuisine?"
"What's haute cuisine?" said Victor.
"It's foreign," said Dibbler.
He scowled at Victor. Someone like Victor under the same roof wasn't part of the plan. He'd been hoping to get Silverfish alone.
"Means food," he added.
Silverfish stared at the card.
"What about it?" he said.
"Why don't you," said Dibbler, speaking very carefully, "hold this card up at the end of the performance?"
"Why should we do that?"
"Because someone like Sham Hager will pay you a lot, quite a lot of money," said Dibbler.
They stared at the card.
"I've eaten at Hager's House of Ribs," said Victor. "I wouldn't say it's the best. Not the best. A long way from being the best," he thought for a bit. "About as far away from being the best as you can get, in fact."
"That doesn't matter," said Dibbler sharply. "That's not important."
"But," Silverfish said, "if we went around saying Hager's House of Ribs was the best place in the city, what would all the other restaurants think?"
Dibbler leaned across the table.
"They'd think," he said. "Why didn't we think of it first?"
He sat back. Silverfish flashed him a look of bright incomprehension.
"Just run that past me one more time, will you?" he said.
"They'll want to do exactly the same thing," said Dibbler.
"I know," said Victor. "They'll want us to hold up cards with things on like, Hager's isn't the best place in town, actually ours is."
"Something like that, something like that," snapped Dibbler, glaring at him. "Maybe we can work on the words, but something like that."
But, Silverfish fought to keep ahead of the conversation. "Hager won't like it, will he? If he pays us money to say his place is best, and then we take money from other people to say that their place is best, then he's bound to,
"Pay us more money," said Dibbler, "to say it again, only in larger letters."
They stared at him.
"You really think that'll work?" said Silverfish.
"Yes," said Dibbler flatly.
You listen to the street traders any morning. They don't shout out, "Nearly fresh oranges, only slightly squashy, reasonable value," do they? No, they shout out, "Get your oranges there, lovely." Good business sense.
He leaned across the desk again.
"Seems to me," he said, "that you could do with some of that around here."
So it appears, said Silverfish weakly.
And with the money,
said Dibbler, his voice a crowbar inserted in the cracks in reality,
you could really get on with perfecting your art.
Silverfish brightened a bit. That's true, he said. For example, some way of getting sound on the... Dibbler wasn't listening. He pointed to a stack of boards leaning against the wall.
What are those? He said.
Ah, said Silverfish, that was my idea. We thought it would be, good business sense,
he savoured the words as if they were some rare new sweet,
to tell people about the other moving pictures we were making.
Dibbler picked up one of the boards and held it critically at arm's length. It said, "Nexty weeky, we will be shoeing Pelias and Melisander, a romantic tragedy, in two reels, thank you."
Oh, he said flatly. Isn't that all right? Said Silverfish, now thoroughly beaten. I mean, it tells them everything they should know, doesn't it?
May I?
Said Dibbler, taking a piece of chalk from Silverfish's desk. He scribbled intently on the back of the card for a while, and then turned it round.
Now it read, "Goddies and men said it was naughty to be, but they would naughty listen. Pelias and Melisander, a story of forbidden love. A searing saga of passion that bridged space and time. This will shock you. With 1,000 elephants."
Victor and Silverfish read it carefully, as one reads a dinner menu in an alien language. This was an alien language, and to make it worse, it was also their own.
"Well, well," said Silverfish, "my word. I don't know if there was anything actually forbidden. It was just very historical. I thought it would help, you know, children and so on, learn about history. They never actually met, you know, which was what was so tragic. It was all very sad."
He stared at the card.
"Though I must say you've certainly got something there.
He looked uncomfortable about something.
"I don't actually remember any elephants," he said, as if it was his own fault. "I was there the whole afternoon we made it, and I don't recall 1,000 elephants at any point. I'm sure I would have noticed."
Dibbler stared. He didn't know where they were coming from, but now he was putting his mind to it, he was getting some very clear ideas about what you needed to put in movies. 1,000 elephants was a good start.
"No elephants?" he said.
"I don't think so."
"Well, are there any dancing girls?"
No.
"Well, are there any wild chases and people hanging by their fingertips from the edge of a cliff?"
Silverfish brightened up slightly.
"I think there's a balcony at one point," he said.
"Yes? Does anyone hang on it by their fingertips?"
"I don't think so," said Silverfish. "I believe Melisander leans over it."
"Yes, but will the audience hold their breath in case she falls off?"
"I hope they'd be watching Pelias's speech," said Silverfish testily. "We had to put it on 5 cards, in small writing."
Dibbler sighed.
"I think I know what people want," he said, "and they don't want to read lots of small writing. They want spectacles."
"Because of the small writing," said Victor sarcastically.
"They want dancing girls. They want thrills. They want elephants. They want people falling off roofs. They want dreams. The world is full of little people with big dreams."
"What, you mean like dwarfs and gnomes and so on?" said Victor.
"No!
Tell me, Mr. Dibbler," said Silverfish, "what exactly is your profession?"
"I sell merchandise," said Dibbler.
"Mostly sausages," Victor volunteered.
"And merchandise," said Dibbler sharply. "I only sell sausages when the merchandising trade is a bit slow."
"And the sale of sausages leads you to believe you can make better moving pictures," said Silverfish. "Anyone can sell sausages, isn't that so, Victor?"
"Well," said Victor reluctantly, "no one except Dibbler could possibly sell Dibbler's sausages."
"There you are, then," said Silverfish. The thing is, said Victor, that Mr. Dibbler can even sell sausages to people that have bought them off him before.
That's right, said Dibbler.
He beamed at Victor.
And a man who could sell Mr. Dibbler's sausages twice could sell anything, said Victor.